it's gonna be good.
Hope it don't flood.
Oh, it's floods of streams.
Good afternoon, Clear Creek County, and welcome to What's Upstream, your local news and information show every Wednesday at noon, rebroadcast on Friday at noon. And this is KYGTLPFM 102.7, 103.9 on your FM dial, streaming over clearcreekradio.com. I'm Mark Cuccinella, and my co-host is Lori Beckel. Good afternoon, Lori.
Good afternoon, Mark.
Yes, and you want to introduce our guests?
I would love to. Do you want to do any PSAs first?
Let's let everybody know what's coming.
Okay, coming is a very exciting review of the county budget that I believe our commissioners may have just voted on yesterday. So hot off the press is the county budget for the next year, and we have our relatively new county manager with us, Colton. Colton, remind me of your last name.
Roloff.
Roloff. Colton Roloff is here, along with Commissioner George Marlin. So that'll be our conversation today, Mark.
Yes, and you categorized it as exciting. I hope it's exciting in a good way. We'll find out. But first, we do have this announcement. You're going to be hearing this on every show for a while, folks. So here it is. If you enjoy what you're hearing and you think community radio is worth supporting, please consider making a contribution to help us stay on the air. We are a community-based volunteer radio station. Donations and sponsorships keep us going. There are several ways you can make a contribution. One, you can click on Donate Now at the top of the page, any page on our website, clearcreekradio.com. Where you can set up a regular payment of any amount through PayPal, or you can mail a check to clearcreekradio.com. And when we say a regular payment of any amount, if it's a dollar, great. If it's $1 million, we don't need it. Just send us something a little bit less than that. All right. Shall we?
But the recurring part of that is what's really valuable.
You know, I've been doing that for years, and I don't even know that I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. It's so easy. You know, once you set it up, it's, you know, it's an amount that is small enough that I don't have to worry about it. And I think, you know, anybody who can do that, it would be so helpful. Thank you.
And it's to support this number one rated radio station in Clear Creek County. I have heard Greg Markles say that.
Yeah, right, Mark? We're number one.
We are number one.
Yeah, we have been for many decades, and we intend to stay that way. All right.
Support this gem of a radio station, folks.
Well, thanks to our guests for coming in today. I know both of you fellas are extremely busy. You've got schedules that are a nightmare to the average person. And thank you for taking time to come in and explain to us the budget for this year. And I'd like to hear a context of, you know, how does it compare to last year's budget? What do you think is when we look over the horizon, what might be coming for us? You know, there's a trend happening here in the community, and I think it's one that you guys are working very hard to accommodate. So
maybe George, you could just start laying out sort of the. You mentioned that this was a different process this year.
Yeah, thank you, and good afternoon, listeners. Always great to be here on KGOAT. Love having a local radio station here to talk to people on. I actually want to start with, you mentioned Colton Roloff, relatively new county manager. I think this is your first time on the radio, right, Colton?
Yes, it is. And it's kind of cool and kind of intimidating.
Yeah. Don't worry about the millions of people that are hanging on every word.
You know, when we say Colton is new as the county manager, that is true. Colton was hired as the deputy county manager, over a year ago. Was it August last year?
October. Labor Day.
Labor Day last year. So he was involved in last year's budget process and played a key role in this year's budget process. He's been our interim county manager kind of throughout the process and under his leadership, and with the new board, we took a different approach to how we build our budget. It used to be that we would get as a board, our first introduction to the budget was when the draft was prepared, and I would spend a lot of time at home reading line by line, trying to put it into spreadsheets and figure out what was going on, and coming up with lists of questions. And then the commissioners would only really talk together about the budget a couple times during that process. This time we did a much more inclusive of everyone process, where like a draft budget was released pretty early in the process. And we did, I don't know how many work sessions, 4 work sessions in public with the board, recorded meetings. You can find them on YouTube, going line by line through every division's budget. And it was a lot better. It was a lot better for, as a board, for us to build our understanding together and not be surprising one another with our questions and our opinions. Mm-hmm. I think it was really helpful for staff. The other thing that we did is staff was invited to share everything that they thought they needed. And so we started out the process with a huge list of everything that every division and elected office thought they needed. It's a big list. It was, I think, $9 million worth of requests across the county. Wow. And we went through a process of kind of whittling that down. Ultimately, it was an activity, and Colton, I'll use your words, in saying, figuring out if there were a few things we could say yes to, because it's not like Clear Creek County is in a great financial position, as we've discussed.
But it sounds highly collaborative. And you whittled down that list with staff in the room?
Yep.
So that maybe is what you're suggesting is a very new process.
It is very new. I feel, as a commissioner for the first time, like I have a holistic understanding of the needs of the divisions, because they were able to speak directly to us about their needs. In the past, ideas had been nixed before we were made aware of them. And so that was a really big benefit. And so I think I will stop there. And Colton, I'll just, what comments do you have to add flavor to the process thing? And then maybe we can get to, you know, what does the budget that we passed look like?
Right. So I guess from my perspective, you know, my background is in big data. And one of the advantages that it gives you is it's how to make informed decisions, right? So I start feeling like when I saw the process last year, I felt like the board, the decision makers, doesn't have enough information. So one of the things I wanted to do was, good or bad, provide them as much information as we could handle in 4 working sessions. And that's why the divisions were able to report on their needs, because ultimately it's not my decision either, right? I want to make sure that we're looking at everything holistically. One of the flaws that organizations can make is they make decisions in a vacuum, right? Mm-hmm. When rarely is that the case. Something that impacts this division can have knock-on effects here and here and here. Or what's the opportunity cost between these two things? And it's very hard for a decision maker to make those decisions with enough information if everything is in a silo, if they're looking at this only on its own and only on the own. So the idea was to build a decision-making environment, so everything is shown together, and so you can see and really start thinking, okay, this compared to this, this compared to this, when everything is on the table in the same place, I think universally leads to better decisions, because you really know what your competing interests are in a much more inclusive way. And the issue with our government right now, our local government, our county government, is that we're very limited. We have very limited resources, right? And so part of how we figure out how to make ourselves work more efficiently and effectively within the financial realities that we have is making sure that that big picture is the focus all the time, right? It's very easy to get focused on a single point within the organization, but the reality is that we're much bigger and we're much more interrelated. The benefit of this, too, is it helps build trust between the divisions, right? We had all the elected officials in the room. The sheriff, the treasurer, the assessor, the coroner, right? They're all part of these conversations, and we can see but the clerk and recorder too. I don't want to leave anybody out. We can see, they can see all of this too, right? And so that we're all kind of looking at the same puzzle together. And then when decisions get made, it's much more difficult to assign a different narrative to that than what actually happened in the room when we're all there together looking at this and everyone understands what, why the decisions got made the way they did.
Colton, excuse me, Lori, but I had a follow-up question. I understand that every department head is going to see their needs in the silo of their department, and they're going to bring you this bundle of requests. Did you have an opportunity to help them curate that the information that they finally brought to the table, or was that something that they did themselves? Maybe that's just deep in the weeds, but
no.
But I do wonder that.
It's an important and good question. I think my role was to, if you are going to make an argument, this is how I want you to make it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not necessarily telling them the merits or the getting into that decision making. Mm-hmm. Philosophy with them, because ultimately that's the elected official's decision.
Sure.
What I was trying to, and we will do better next year, was have a cohesive way in which case arguments are presented to make sure that enough information is being given to, again, I try to avoid situations where just the division that has a better person at making an argument wins, even though the merit might be on the other one's side and they're not as skilled as making a convincing argument, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the reason why you want to try to standardize the way the ask is being made so that you're eliminating that that additional volatility in the decision-making process, right?
So, right. Whoever shouts the loudest is the rightest. We don't want that.
We don't want that. We want to make sure that we're kind of looking at things the same. Now, that is an imperfect system because local government does so much, right? The needs of their very different service areas, their very different populations that they're serving, they do very different things. So in cases where we can standardize, we make with the acknowledgement that it's never going to be exactly the same because that's where your elected official's decision-making comes in, is the competing goods, right? Everything the local government does is good. Mm-hmm. It benefits people. Where are the competing goods and how do we prioritize those? And so we do the best we can to standardize that decision-making process, but ultimately it's still the decision-maker's decision.
So the thing that I'm remembering about is how this year's budget season began with, five of your roadshows that took place last summer. They were pretty much focused on the budget and the concerns about the budget. I really appreciated the information that was presented at those. And I guess I'm just wondering, were there any particular issues that came out of those roadshows that then informed the budgeting process?
You mean in terms of constituent feedback?
Yes, because that's what those really were. They were the first part of the collaboration with the community.
I think the roadshows were a lot of really trying to educate the community about what's going on financially with the county, right? About our long-range structural deficit. The feedback, like my takeaway from those roadshows was that both the public and with two commissioners that were in their first budget process, and not trying to denigrate them at all, they're both really smart individuals, and counties do a lot, and it's a very complicated situation, is that we had to do a better job of laying out the big picture, just like Colton shared. We didn't get a lot in the way of specific, we want you to cut this feedback. And this is the interesting thing. We've spent years talking with the public about there may be an environment where, and this is real, like if we don't figure out our problem over the next, by 2029, we are going to be talking about significant service reductions. And so we continuously ask the public the question. We describe all the services we provide. We say, okay, this is your opportunity to tell us which ones you value the most. And we tend to get crickets. And my takeaway from that is that when you look, when you're looking at a list of everything the county does, like, these are all services that people need.
It's too complicated for people. But George, you mentioned the 2029 budget. Explain why that's significant in this context.
That's significant in this context because when we were when we were getting more revenue than we needed from our single large employer before they scaled back and we had revenue losses. By the way, we lost about a third of our annual revenues over the last 10 years. The commissioners at the time were wise, and they created a pretty large, what am I trying to say?
Fund balance.
Thank you. Yeah, a rainy day fund, a fund balance. And so we've been, for the last few years, spending into that fund balance rather than make a bunch of cuts now. We're trying to give the organization time to figure out how to make strategic investments, get more efficient, have conversations with the voters about what kind of tax rates they want, what kind of services they value, and what kind of economic development they want to see. And so at our current rate, with the projected revenue increases that we have in the model, right, over what do we think sales tax and property tax is going to do, how optimistic are we that federal grants are going to continue, et cetera, right? Yeah. 2029 is right now, like every year until 2029, we're pretty confident that on the current path, we'll be able to operate a county government that looks like what it does today. And by 2029, we'll need to see some combination of new taxes, new things built, or services reduced. Is that?
Yeah. So if you could equate that to personal finances, if I've got $10,000 in the bank and it costs, and I lose $1,000 worth of income every month, then I got 10 months to decide, do I want to eat less or have less house or sell my car, something drastic, right?
Exactly.
if I can't find another source of funding,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, if you don't get a raise, get a second job,
yeah.
or cut your expenses.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And I've described that dynamic as kind of the three-legged stool, right? When it comes to counties' financials, it's really revenue, expenses, and the third one is economic development. What does your tax base look like? One is the tax rate, and one is the tax base, and those are distinct, right? One is how much of your existing tax base and at what rate are you taxing them, and the other one is how big is it? You can have a huge tax base at a small rate and still end up with a ton of money, or you can have a small tax base with a high rate, right? So, you know, generally speaking, you start getting things a little wonky when one of those legs is too high. Then the stool it falls over, right? Because generally in balance, that's how you want to keep things because it builds more of an innate stability. Having said that, that is a completely a commissioner level decision, right? What we can do as county staff is give them the most information as they can to make decisions. Make sure we're transparent about how we're making these assumptions, particularly on forecasting, right? Things like that, which are subjective, and do what we can to make sure that where we find expenses we can cut, we cut, right? And but outside of that, those other two stools, it's much more of a community driven conversation, and where the priorities are.
Yeah, part of that conundrum in my mind, and I'd like to hear your response to this. If you grow your economic base, you're growing your need for services, and so your costs are going to be impacted to some degree as well. So how do you square that circle?
So to me, it's being very specific, right? What's unique about this county and why this is such a great problem to solve for a very specific person like me is it has to be specific. General growth won't work here. We don't have the land. We don't have very cheap infrastructure to maintain, right, because of our topography, right? General growth is not real, right? Only about 11% of the land in this county is even buildable, right? Between the federal lands and the grade, we're talking about a very, very small. And so when people say we need more X, it's like, okay, well, what does X mean? And what is the ROI to the taxpayer for that kind of development, right? So it's really being specific about what kind of growth we can sustain and what is the return to the taxpayer? Because you do get a lot of you know, coming from other municipalities, you do get a generalized growth narrative where growth is good all the time. It's like, not necessarily. It depends on what it is, right? And some places have the luxury of this generalized growth model, which is, I always fall back on a Napoleon quote, quantity has a quality all of its own, right? Mm-hmm. Is that you grow so much that something will work and then it'll end up balancing out in the end, right? We don't have that luxury. We don't have the space. We don't have the water and we don't have the time, right? And so really what we're talking about here is when we do start looking at where we can grow, how is it returning finances to the county is only one of the considerations. How is it meeting the needs of the community and how specific it is to a specific identified problem, right? And really having county staff watchdog that, because it is very easy for people to come and make a bunch of promises that don't, and then they're gone, right?
Yeah.
And so making sure that we have really good business cases for all of that.
Well, when you talk about 11% of the land that's developable, so a lot of that's already been developed, mm-hmm. most of it.
Yes.
All the low-hanging fruit has been picked in that regard. Now you talk about specific development, and so I don't know really exactly what that means, because we have such limited opportunity for development, and the cost a benefit ratio is so skewed, it seems to me, based on that limited opportunity. You need something that's a real prize, don't you?
I think that's really what we're here to help the board decide, right, is when we see these projects, we vet them from all angles and that we present to the board and the community what the reality is in all directions, right? And what I mean by specific is just not using, like, general terms to describe development. We need this, we need more restaurants, or, and it's like, well, where is the restaurant? Where is it? Where, you know,
who's going to work there? Where are they going to live?
How, you know, like, that's what I mean is I don't like generalized concepts, because in all communities, the simple gets in the way of what's correct, mm-hmm. right? But here, where the opportunity cost is so high, we have to be very specific about what we're talking about, and we want to apply that level of, like, business case level analysis to all of these different kinds of ED projects that so that we can inform the board and the decision makers on what the reality is, and from every direction, so that all voices and all concerns are heard. And ultimately, it ultimately is a cost benefits analysis on some level. But what we can control at the staff is making sure that all the information is available, right?
George. Yeah,
and I'll jump in here and I'll try to tie it back to the budget. I mean, development is a term that doesn't just mean go build stuff, right? Development is change that makes our lives better. And that's how it's defined in the field of economics. And I think I'm excited that we're starting to have a conversation at that level. A lot of the conversations tend to be, to pick out tourism just briefly, we tend to talk about it in terms of, do we like tourists or do we not like tourists? And we need to have a conversation about how do we benefit from tourists and how do we protect ourselves from the impacts, right? And that's a conversation.
And how do we educate the tourists?
Of course.
About being here.
Of course. And that's just one example of how we need to get to the next level of the way we talk about the decisions we have to make. Mm-hmm. And to tie it back to the budget, so when we were discussing these needs, one of the questions that the board had was, for all of the, one of the criteria we used is this ask something that you need to expand services or to improve workplace culture, reduce turnover, et cetera? Or is this an investment in our future? Right? Is this going to somehow help us solve these development problems? Is it going to identify long-term savings, et cetera? And so one of the things that we picked was a long-range planner. Our planning department has long asked for a long-range planner, and this position is going to shepherd us through trying to understand what our goals are, what is good for us to build and where, and what our code needs to look like to get that done.
And what do you envision a role for that position in the revision of the master plan? Because I know that's coming up.
100%.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Well, we haven't had that luxury, have we? I mean, a long-term vision.
We have struggled to build a long-term vision together that's specific. And you can point to our last master plan, which is kind of documents everything that's going on and a lot of different things we aspire to. And they're cross-cutting goals, and there's no real prioritization. And so we hope the next one will be a lot more specific with a plan about here's what we think we're going to do.
Mm-hmm. And so.
Well, yeah, let me just say that we're about halfway through the show, and we've talked about the budget in 30,000-foot terms. And when we get back, let's dig into some details. Can we do that, guys?
Yep.
That work for you? All right. Okay, we'll be back in just a moment. We'll hear a little recorded music, and we'll be back. Everyone, we're back here at What's Upstream, and Lori, I've been kind of hogging our guests. Why don't you get us started in the second half here?
Yeah, well, I think it is very exciting to hear that there is, even though it's a very tight budget, it sounds like there is room for perhaps a very needed position related to the future. And a future plan in building. I was quite involved with the master plan the last time because we did it when I was on the Planning Commission. And I felt like that was a fairly good master plan. It had a whole lot of community input. It really focused a lot on balancing quality of life for people who live here with people who visit here. And now having the opportunity to really create a plan with the future in view, I think is pretty interesting. And I'm assuming this position was approved yesterday when you approved the budget. And I don't know if there's much to say about hiring for that position, but if there is anything to say about it or when it might be open for people to take a look at a job description, that might be useful to know. Maybe there's some wonderful planner out there who has a degree in the future of small mountain communities.
Oh, boy. Well,
out there.
We'll keep our fingers crossed on that one. So, let's get down to brass tacks. What the budget's all about, and I maybe you have a different way of looking at this, but I think of the budget in two distinct categories. One is your revenue, and one is your expenditures, and everything flows from those two. From the revenue side, let's say. So let's start with that. Where does the money come from? How much do we have? Is it the same as last year, a little more, a little less? What's going on?
So revenue is, I'll take the revenue. So revenue comes from really, there's a million sources that it comes from, but there's really three or four broad categories here. One is property tax, which is very predictable, but is also statutorily most of the things that go on with who gets taxed, how much they get taxed, how much, you know, your property's worth is set by state statute. There's sales tax, which counties can issue countywide. We have both of those income sources. The third one is intergovernmental. And so we have spent the last year getting a control and really good forecasts and understanding about our property tax and our sales tax. What's different this year and what was a headwind in this budget process was intergovernmental. And intergovernmental is anything that comes from the states or the feds or any outside money. Mm-hmm. And it's a huge part of our budget, pushing a third of that revenue, right? We have entire departments that are funded by that. And now we're seeing that money start to kind of intermittently turn off with no warning, right? In which case, in order for those services to continue, it's now a general fund obligation potentially, or it needs to come forward towards the board on how to address this. That's the volatility in the budget that we see going forward. That's very, very challenging. It's because we don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. So the property tax is very predictable, and you can make pretty close estimates of what your sales tax is going to be based on historical events, right? But the arbitrary nature of the federal government in this day and age and its impacts that rolls downhill to the state, and now the state is impacted in the amount of money that they can distribute, right? That becomes more of an unknown than a predictable
and
number.
It's relatively new. Right.
Yeah.
You know, it used to be that the volatility that people focused on in the forward looking projections of revenue was about sales tax.
Mm-hmm.
And here it's even more volatile because we have such a huge disparity between our visitors and our native population. Right. Mm-hmm. We get for every one person who lives here, we get 1,000 visitors.
Yeah.
Right. But they're largely engaging in what we would call discretionary spending. Right. So that number is actually fairly volatile from us in the case of sales tax. So that's where the focus traditionally has been in government forecasting, is about sales tax.
Could you explain discretionary spending, Colton?
So
what does that mean?
Like going to the bar and getting a beer is an optional activity. You don't need it to survive. Discretionary. Like it's your decision.
And so you might come here to ride your bike and you then may decide whether to go home and have a beer or to go to a restaurant here
right.
and have a beer.
Gotcha. But even in your own life, right, if you buy, you know, I like board games, right? Mm-hmm. So I buy board games, but that's my decision. I don't need those to live, right? So when we classify economic activity as discretionary versus non-discretionary, which is like healthcare, shelter, food, you know, people, the volatility in the discretionary spending is fairly high because people will... When economic times start getting hard, like right now, people start cutting back, right? And so you start seeing sales tax collections that are very dependent on discretionary spending just have more innate volatility in them. Whereas bigger municipalities that have a lot more non-discretionary because their populations are so big have a little bit more stability in their sales tax than we do. But we are very confident in our sales tax projections. And then the reason I bring this up is now the focus of the volatility is on what used to be incredibly stable, which is that intergovernmental transfers.
Yeah.
Now it's even harder because there's no statistical model that I can build to figure it out, right? It's a yes or no. It's a binary. It just didn't show up one day.
And you can talk to people in the different agencies
and try
to get a sense of what's going on. But so now you have to build estimates on those numbers, and you got to pick one out of the sky for that third of it. And good luck with that. But you've done that. That's part of it. And so the expenditures are based on those projections.
Well, in a sense, we are still deficit spending into the general fund, in the general fund specifically, into that fund balance, right?
Yeah, sure. So that's really a fourth.
That's the fourth one.
That's the fourth revenue stream.
If I can make a comment there just on expenditures, and I think I think the lens on expenditures certainly is tied to what we project the revenues as.
Right.
But it's really important to remember that almost all of the money we spend on people. And they're our neighbors, and they're mm-hmm. the people that do the work. And I think the strongest, most compelling lens on expenditures is stability, right? And also the people we serve who expect services, right? And so mm-hmm. we do try to do a good job of predicting revenues, and we try to do a really good job of making sure that shifts in revenues don't dramatically impact what it's like to work in Clear Creek County, what it's like to be served by Clear Creek County.
So as county commissioners, is your decision point, do we spend more of the reserves to create a stable work environment if projections turn out to be less than anticipated, or do we make cuts as we need to during the year based on the budget?
I mean, an example is like this year we, Colton, you're probably better off at explaining this than I am, but we start with, what did you actually spend last year? And this is kind of a different approach. Instead of what was in your budget last year, it's what did you actually spend? And, we found some savings right away, right there, just by trying to budget closer to what we think we're actually going to spend. Going from there, it is, what do we think we need? One of the things that we know we need is to consistently help people's wages keep up with inflation, right? And so, like, we got a 5.5% bump in property taxes that we're able to retain this year. We'll get the other half next year of the assessed value increase that everybody saw. And one of the big budget goals is a 3% increase to keep up with inflation, right? Mm-hmm. So just to give you a sense of a lot of the expense puzzle is just kind of written in, and then we say, okay, what are the needs and how much of these can we fit?
Well, I guess my question really, I didn't maybe say it very well, but if you have this volatile portion of your budget and your one of your priorities is to create a stable work environment. Yes, you're going to increase wages to sustain their buying power. But what happens if there's a shortfall in the budget? Will you make adjustments during the year on the revenue side or on the expenditure side?
So I think it's important with those decisions because the unknown is generalized, we don't know specifically where the funding is going away and what it pays for. This year is different because we've scheduled a check-in in June with the board to look at the budget again, see where our revenue is at, particularly nice. On our intergovernmental, but also on our sales tax too, because mm-hmm. you know, unfortunate reality is if we have a bad recession or something like that, we need to be talking about this all the time. Is the check back in with the board and say, hey, we're missing revenue here, 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 and here. Mm-hmm. What are the solves we can do? Can mm-hmm. we grow? Can we shrink? Like, let's check in on the health of these revenue streams more frequently than once a year, because mm-hmm. we can make decisions halfway through the year. And part of this budget process that's new is now there is a commitment to that June check-in. So we have the first half of the year to kind of see where we're, how we're doing, right? And then be able to more nimbly adapt and not lose 6 more months waiting to the next budget cycle if there's some kind of critical reduction that needs to be made.
Boy, that's really smart.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I might just comment, you know, we had a town hall on Monday night with our state senator, our representative, and our three commissioners. And the theme, really, of a lot of that town hall was the uncertainty of funding that has always been counted on is quite uncertain for the state budget, for our county budget. It was interesting to me that what you're saying was also echoed at our town hall the other night, that it's a struggle for many people who are trying to make budgets work.
Can we back up for just a moment here and let's see if we can find out what the budget was last year and what your budget is going to be, not last year, but 2025, how much, what was the revenue I know that it's not all in yet, but what was the projection for 2025, and what do you think for 2026? And if you don't have that number right on top of your head, give me your best ballpark.
So basically, there was I don't have the numbers specifically because I need to get them off my computer. But
That's great.
The change was that we had to make a lot of corrections last year for 25's budget. It was not an easy budget process. We felt like we needed to correct our revenue projections and be much more conservative. And so we made a lot of reductions last year. We went to 32-hour work weeks for some employees. We cut a lot of capital. We cut a lot of additional expenses, which got us to a more stable place for 25 in general terms. Now, the change this year is we went further on the expense reduction side, where we went back to actuals for expenses. So we found a lot of other savings there. But the reality is that our benefits costs went up. The intergovernmental, you know, volatility packed a lot more risk and a lot less revenue into our budget. The health clinic's bond payment is now on the general fund. That we got donations for the first 5 years. There's five more payments. And so we were able to expand capacity in places where we see really good ROI on that position, like the long-term planner, right? We're really going to start seeing returns over the long run, because the point of the town halls wasn't just to talk about the budget. It was to talk about the five-year trend, right? A budget is literally an expense document of a year over year.
Yeah.
The structural problem is long-term, right? It's how does that trend line moving? So what we're doing is we're really trying to make very strategic decisions on what's a one-time expense, what's moving the trend line, what's making us more sustainable in the long term. Because if we keep thinking about this as a year-over-year problem, then we can lose that horizon. That's the actual goal, right? And so as long as the trend line is moving, we're all of those expenses to say is that drop dead, all of those changes that happened over the last 2 years, our drop dead date on when we really are going to have a crisis got pushed back a year. We bought another year.
Right? Nice.
And we'll continue to buy years as we can, being very conservative about where we think our revenues are, where we think our expenses are, to push it out until we don't have to buy years at all anymore, right? We're really doing what we can to try to prevent that crash landing, right? If we can rebuild the plane while it's flying and, you know, land safely at a sustainable, financially confident position, that's the goal, right?
Yeah. So every year's budget is in a context of you know, how's your revenue trending, how are your expenses trending, and so we heard George, you said that that there was an increase in the property tax revenues, and that's helpful in the context of the budget, and then there was recently the 1A ballot initiative, and explain to us how that impacts the budget, because now there's more revenue for the ambulance and in the fire department, which is somewhat county impacted. But anyway, how does that fit in?
It's a good question, and I think your answer is spot on. That was an important first step in making the budgets of Clear Creek Fire and Clear Creek EMS more sustainable. Clear Creek EMS, with that money, was able to hire staff for a third ambulance. It's something that we've known they needed for years. This last year, it became...
Let's call it decades.
Yeah, let's do that. You're right. Yeah, you used to be on that team. So we've known it's a need. Last year, we said we just can't do it in this environment, and that team worked their tails off to respond to calls and maintain the programs that they have that make them the best EMS agency in the state. And I'm talking about whole blood. I'm talking about C-CHAT and the co-responder program, and which is actually grant funded, and maintaining like probably nation leading cardiac arrest save rates, right? Where we're saving 24% of the people that call with cardiac arrest are having their lives saved by that team. The national average is 7%. And every time I mention CCMS, I just can't stop talking about how proud I am of that team. Aaron Crawley, their director, is actually getting an award from Congressman Neguse on Saturday for the First Responder of the Year.
Great.
First Responder of the Year.
So they're getting a third team because of the taxpayer support. Their budget is not solvent. Their budget is they still are facing a budget deficit. And so is the fire authority. But it was a crucial first step to get unincorporated tax contributions up to where the municipalities are. And we're going to continue to have conversations. The impact, but your question was, what's the impact on the conversation we were just having?
Right.
Very little. Because we were talking about the county's general fund and the planning department and all that stuff. And so very little impact on the county's general fund.
The general fund contribution to emergency services remains the same, but it's been the fund has been enhanced by the additional monies.
It remains the same at zero, right?
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, you've looked into your crystal ball when you have projections for revenue, and you're trying to fit that into a plan to establish a trend and how to adjust to that trend. But then the other critical piece, of course, is the expenditure. So how do you decide how to divvy up that inadequate fund? How did you guys go about that?
Our head went to the same place at the same time. So yeah, we asked Colton to conduct a staffing analysis, and mm-hmm. You're probably the best to report on that since you did it.
Yeah. So what we did was what's so wonderful about living here is that how unique Clear Creek County is, right? But it also makes the challenges a little unique. And I mean, by little unique, I mean specific to us, right? So finding a true comp county to say, how many people do you have doing this job?
And
it doesn't really work for us for a couple of reasons. And I want to start there. So, you know, we have very little developable land. We're very mountainous, right? Uniquely almost. we get 20 million at minimum to 30 million people a year coming through I-70 corridor for a tax base of 9,000 people. And we get 10 million visitors a year that get out of their car. So the reality is that we are a county with 9,000 residents and a very small tax base, a population base that's shrinking every year. That's true population is between 40 and 50,000 people, right? So that's the load that we're under. So the staffing analysis was very specific. So we looked at Lake County, Rauk County, Gilpin County, and us, and we took
Ouray.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Ouray is the other one. I'm sorry. And we took like specific things. So there's the raw numbers of FTEs they have to deliver the same kind of service, but there's also another metric in which it's how much road and bridge people do you have for miles of maintained road, right? Or what is your law enforcement staffing to your true market population, which is actually your law enforcement liability, not just your residents, right? So it was very specific for each division on how many people are hired, what's their work put, how efficient are they handling their, you know, overall liability. For example, like when we look at the assessor, we look at how many parcels are in that county, right? Because you might have a huge county with no mining claims, so there's way less parcels, which mm-hmm. actually kind of distorts the assessor's workload, right? Because they assess a single parcel, right?
Right.
And so we did all of that, and what we found is that we're extremely lean. We're so lean that when other counties were facing several other their budgets were not great this year either, they're calling us. Be like, how do you do this with four people? We have eight, right? So we're actually like kind of ahead of the curve a little bit on being efficient and small with our true liability, because we have been trying to become more fiscally responsible and effective for 10 years. Where for some counties that might have had booming Colorado economy, everything grows 10 to 15% a year for 20 years, mm-hmm. they haven't had to work on that, right? So we went from being kind of like Clear Creek County has famously its own little financial problem over here, but everyone else in the Alpine's doing great. And now they're looking at us and being like, hey, how'd y'all pull that off? Because we're really now looking at the same kind of reality. And where I can say as confidently is we've got a few services that we do need to look at, but for the most part across the board, we are very lean for our liability. And in that, to George's point earlier, creates a little bit of an organizational health problem. We are so lean that any turnover is very, very devastating. Because if you have, just talking back to planning, if you've got eight people in your planning department and you lose one, you're only asking maybe six other people to take 10% more work. If you've got two and you lose one, stuff stops.
It's not happening.
Right? And so we're trying to run that line of we've got real problems to solve, but we need to have enough institutional capacity to be able to solve them, knowing that if you're too lean, the kind of the chaos of that and just in natural attrition, people moving jobs, prevents things from moving forward, right? Because it's two steps forward, three steps back, you know, that kind of stuff. So we're doing what we can to run that line. And I was actually really proud of where we came out of that staffing analysis, because we have shown that we can get, if not more work done, the same amount of work with less people. And the risk is, and that we're working on dealing with internally, is just that the resiliency of some of those teams that are so small.
That's a critical element for sure, because you're going to have turnover. That's just a given. Sun's going to come up tomorrow and the county's going to have turnover. That's a fact. And so we have just a few minutes left. I wonder, we haven't talked about any specific numbers, but I'm wondering, people really, what they see and what they feel from the government is the services that are provided, okay? Are there any places where they'll see a noticeable difference in the coming year?
I don't think so. This year, we didn't have to do like we did last year. With what we saw with assessed values going up and what we did last year, we were really able to stabilize. And I think that's a really good thing. I think the organization has been faced with a lot of change over the last 10 years. And I think the most telling way, the best way to tell the story is that between 2008 and 2015, we gained about 35 employees in our FTE count. And we are back down to 2008 staffing levels. We have those same 35 employees over the last 10 years. We have largely through attrition, eliminating positions when people leave, have come all the way back down.
And I would actually say in real terms, the decrease is more than that, because we offer services now we didn't do back then.
Yeah, I was going to say the ambulance wasn't part of the county back then, and it is now.
Youth Network, C-CHAT team, right? There's Charlie Place. There's several organizations that go against that FTE count that we didn't do at all. So not only, so we've had to actually, that existing county staff service operation has gotten even more efficient just for us to stick to the 2008 number because of the additional service lines that we provide now that count against that count that weren't there before. So, you know, that's when I'm talking about us being lean. Like when we look at comparable offices into other counties, we are really, really, really lean. And that leanness allows us to be one more effective with the revenue that we do get, but also gives us room for the county to provide services that it normally may not be able to if we were sticking to our statutory, which are critical to the community. I mean, we're talking the roundabout didn't exist either, right?
No.
Yeah.
I think 2008 is a really convenient year to talk about as a point in time because, let's see here, we had just built a new high school. We were projecting population increases. You know, everything was going great in the county and we were hiring. Housing costs weren't the crisis they are. Childcare systems were working. And a lot of these issues have emerged, right? Wildfire mitigation was something that this community was skeptical about because we liked the way our forests looked. There's a lot of issues that have emerged. and conditions that have changed in Clear Creek County during that period of time. So it's really interesting to have those 3 years to.
Well, I think if I had to look at the biggest impact from then to now, it's the tremendous increase in tourism and the impacts that's had on services. You know, you're the point of what's the population of Clear Creek County compared to the what you might call the equivalent population of Clear Creek County. It's an enormous burden, and it's doing nothing but growing. And so I don't know how you're going to deal with that other than more revenue. And I wonder, are there thoughts or plans in the future for additional revenues?
There have to be. We have to. The promise I made when I ran for office was that before we see severe service reductions, people are going to get several options in front of them for how to fund the government and define the government that they think they deserve. Mm-hmm. And so we'll be looking at options, I think, moving forward consistently. I think we need better options as well. Right now, what we can do right now is property tax, sales tax. We can propose tobacco taxes, and we have not done that. Our marijuana excise tax is already maxed out. And we charge sales taxes on food and diapers and electricity. And so we need better options. Right? Mm-hmm. And by we, I mean the voters need better options. It's been a huge goal of mine during my time in office. I do think that conversation is gaining traction among counties as we find, as Colton said, more friends with financial problems. Mm-hmm. And we need to start to have conversations with the state. Not start. We've long had these conversations, but we need to bring more compelling narratives and more precise asks to the state around, look at how often we're on the highway taking care of this population.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And how can you help out? How can you make this work for us?
You actually said that directly to our senator and our representative the other night. We need better options.
I say it to them every time we talk.
Mm-hmm. You had witnesses.
This is one of the times that this is one of the things we did this year is that we did put into the budget to hire a lobbyist around a very specific mission, which is mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. it is around getting our voters better options to mm-hmm. to think about taxes. It's around talking to the state about the impacts that are coming into us that Colton just described. And hopefully we get some value out of that. A big takeaway I've had from my last 7 years is you need more than a commissioner talking to anybody that will listen ad nauseum. We need some professional help on this one.
Okay, we've got 1 minute left. I'd like to ask you guys for any final thoughts. Colton, if you want to start.
I think our uniqueness as a county and the unique way our economy works is exactly why, at least for me, I was relieved that the board did approve the funding to hire the lobbyists, because we need better cards to play. Mm-hmm. Because our hand does not, our ability, the levers we have to pull statutorily do not reflect the reality of what's going on here. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're looking to address from an economist's perspective, the inefficiency here. It's all rules based, right? There's a solution here that's more equitable, and we're trying and we're doing everything we can to work with the state. And it's been number one priority for me going into next year is how can I support this message of whether it's with our state partners or with, you know, the lobbies or whoever on, look, like we have a real efficiency problem here and we want to solve this because it's the best solution on the table. Is that we can figure out a way to make sure that burden of the visitors is not wholly on the residents, and what we need is better ability to tax that kind of revenue.
Okay, George, and any message to the community?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, these conversations, and they can feel very abstract. These are conversations about how we serve you.
Yeah,
there are a lot of different ways that your life is better when the county government is able to show up, whether it's influencing the price of housing. Or getting your road plowed, et cetera, et cetera. My big takeaway from this budget season that was so engaged with amongst the board and the leadership team and the staff of the county is that we've got a great staff team. We've got a staff team that really is learning to see the big picture better every day to analyze and use data to make decisions better every day. And I've got a lot of confidence in this organization to solve this problem.
Thank you, George. George Marlin, County Commissioner, and Colton Roloff, County Manager. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedules to talk to us about the 2026 budget. And we'll have additional conversations when you have your update in the middle of the year. Come back and tell us about it, okay? All right, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Lori, good night.
Good night. Good night, Mark.
Good night and good luck.